Oh, snaps!
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Good morning, everybody. I am Dee Dee Mercer-Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. That's right. No dry dog food. Why? Because, well, by golly, it's dry. It's dry. Joining me today to talk about all things pet health is Dr. Judy Jasek, J-A-S-E-K. Good morning, Dr. Jasek.
Good morning, Dee Dee. How are you doing in these challenging times?
Well, I'm challenged.
Challenged. We all are. We all are, right?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. I've said this many times, there are going to be, yes, this is painful. No doubt about it. There are hardships and it's painful for many, many people. But pain is the one thing that causes people to move in a different direction. Mm-hmm. Without pain, without discomfort, we will stay the same because we are creatures of habit. So if you look at your own life and you say, well, what caused me to go in a different direction, to see new achievable possibilities in business and life, which is the name of my book, by the way, it's on Amazon, but it's always going to be pain. Right? There's very few people that wake up and say, I'm going to go in a different direction, even though that's going to be super hard. And I'm okay where I am right now. People just don't move unless they have to. Think about it in your business, Dr. Jasek. How many people actually get off of kibble because it's convenient and it's easy and move over to raw where you got to actually think a little bit without there being a reason like their dog is sick? How many people just do it? Not that many people do it just because.
Not that many. Very, very few. I would say almost everybody that I work with, they've had a wake-up call. And as you know, I work with a lot of cancer patients and they either have a dog or cat that's currently diagnosed or they have had one in the past and they're like, please help me not have to go down that road again. I understand there's a lot of conflicting information. They get a lot of information from the conventional vets that raw is bad and you got to feed these kibble diets. And so they believe that and they go down that road and then they realize, oh, maybe that's not as healthy as they led me to believe. But you're right. Most people need the wake up call. I think it's true with a lot of people, you know, with their own health too. You know, they don't want to really make those hard changes unless there's a good reason to do it. And if there ever was a reason, this, you know, for human health, this COVID thing, because the healthier you are, you get infected, the, you know, less severe your symptoms are going to be. So, you know, this is a great time to think about, you know, what are you eating? It's hard because it's, you know, it's stressful. So people want the comfort food, you know, they want the extra glass of wine or cocktail, you know, to help soothe the nerves, but you know, got to really be thinking about keeping yourself healthy and keeping your pets healthy because, you know, this is not the time you want to be taking your vet or your pet into the vet unless it's absolutely necessary with the curbside drop-offs. And, you know, if people are becoming more financially challenged, you really want to avoid those vet bills. And what's the best way to do that? Feed a diet, invest a little bit more in the food, and feed them that raw diet. It's going to be way less money in the long run than paying the vet bills. Don't default back to the kibble just because it's more convenient and less expensive because it's going to come back to bite you down the road.
Right. And you have a great service that you're providing right now. You're doing a $35 consult to actually help the pet parent figure out whether they really do need to go into their primary vet. Now you can get in touch with Dr. Jasek anywhere in the country. It's A-H AHAVET.com, AHAVET.com. And Dr. Jasek can actually see your pet via Zoom. Yep, we're still doing Zoom, even though they've got some issues. So if we have a hacker, you know, if somebody comes on and starts ranting and raving, you know, we've been hacked. We'll take it down. But but anyway, we're still doing Zoom. But anyway, you've got this great service where you can help people figure that out. Because here's what we do when we're stressed and when we're afraid. We make up stories in our head. We let this, as someone described many years ago, that there's this black horse, and we're riding in this, you know, carriage of this black horse, and this black horse is just running away, right? Just running away with our thoughts. And we make up things that aren't really happening, and we go to the worst possible place. And I think whenever we do that, whenever we're not in charge of our mind, that's a snap out of it. Hang on a second. Let's calm down and rethink this. Then people can get into our pocketbooks very, very easy, Dr. Jasek.
Oh yeah.
Because we want a solution, and we will pay anything, any amount of money in order to get that relief. So I see you, Dr. Jasek, as sort of that relief valve that's on that Instapot, you know, where you hit it and all that steam just comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you are, because you can help just let all that stress just out of the pot, out of people's heads, and they can think clearly if they will just contact you. That's AHAVET.com.
Yeah, right. I think it's going to be important in these times too. People, you know, we've talked about this before, about you need to be your pet's advocate, and you need to think a little bit, and you need to make some decisions. And I think that's going to be even more important, because services are not as plentiful. They're not going to get any cheaper. And, you know, you are going to have to, you know, if you're having to budget a little bit, or you just don't want to take your pet to the vet and drop them off curbside, you know, you're going to have to calm down, take a few breaths, and make some, you know, logical decisions, and ask, you know, when you find that your mind is running away with all these thoughts. And I do the same thing. I wake up at 3 a.m. That's like the worst. Just lay there, and then it's always the worst thoughts, you know, start spinning, you know, what do I do about this? Or what do I do about that? Or what if this happens? And, you know, you got to step back and say, well, is there any like actual evidence? Is there any evidence that that's true? Or is that just something I'm making up? Because you're making the story up anyway, make up something good, you know, make up something positive. Like, why make up something bad? I mean, that's our human nature, but, you know, train yourself to make up a best case scenario story instead of a worst case scenario story. If you're making it up anyway, make up something good.
Right. I think we're always like, I'm afraid to make up something good because I might be wrong. Okay. Well, worry doesn't really help, right? It doesn't really help. I mean, you've got the same amount of time, and you're sitting in this space and time. So does worrying actually help the situation? And it doesn't, if you really step back. Once you get through that period, you look back and you say, man, I shouldn't have worried about it because it worked out okay. Or even if it didn't work out okay, you could have been in that same space and time without making yourself sick, right? Yeah. It's just something that when you're conscious of your thoughts. So we really want to be conscious of what we're thinking right now. Now, one thing that people are thinking about, Dr. Jasek, is the coronavirus and pets. Can you give us an update on what you've seen or heard or learned between the last time we did the podcast and now about coronavirus and pets?
I think there was a report that came out of China that a couple of dogs tested positive, but I don't know that that's been confirmed, you know. And this is something else, you know, don't believe everything you hear in the media. It's not like you want to ignore it, but make sure there's good, solid evidence. And so, like we were talking about, the latest is this cat. There's this tiger in the Bronx Zoo was supposedly tested positive for COVID. And you know, when I look at these onesies and twosies, like we have one or two pets here and there that test positive, well, how many people have been infected? And I think if pets could truly get this, or it was truly going back and forth, we'd be seeing a whole lot more pets with symptoms. And the other thing is, these tests are not 100%, and there's different tests out there. So where did the, what type of test did they use? Was it done appropriately? Because there could be, you know, for any kind of medical test, you know, in any kind of disease, there could be false negatives and false positives. I've actually heard that the coronavirus test is only about 80% accurate. So still worth doing, but there's about a 20% chance that you could test positive and you're actually not positive, or you could test negative and it's actually positive. I mean, that happens in any kind of testing. I mean, it's just not, it's never 100%. It's still worth doing, but it's not 100%. So when we're testing in a different species, you know, one of my questions would be that, could there be a similar related virus? It's not exactly the same thing, but it's still showing up as a positive on the test. I think there's a lot of questions to be asked, when, especially when that stuff comes out in the mass media. I think we really need to look at it logically, not ignore it, but look at it logically and say, okay, you know, what does this really mean? And do I really need to be afraid? And for God's sake, please don't start abandoning your cats or taking them to the shelter because you're worried that they're going to give you this disease. They're not going to be inherent carriers, meaning they're not just going to automatically have it. Even if it became possible that it could go back and forth, I don't think you're going to be at any greater risk for, you know, for having a pet, even if you're in the high risk populations, you know, people with, you know, other diseases, other health conditions, or the elderly. This is not a time to be abandoning your pets, really, because then we're just going to overrun the shelter systems. And, you know, you need your pets right now for your own health and sanity. You know, they've done these studies that pets keep us healthy. So keep your pets, pay attention to the news, but be careful about where you're getting your information from. And Will, I'm always tuned in. You know, I get, you know, notifications from the AVMA, the American Veterinary Medical Association. They're so far saying, no, there's not enough evidence that pets can get this. Like, they're not making any statements. So, you know, we'll keep updated, tune in every week. And as I hear new things, we'll definitely be talking about them on the podcast.
Great. All right. Hold on to your pets. All right. So let's talk about springtime. Oh, springtime and pets. Oh, it does bring a lot of problems because people start seeing their pets itch, and all of a sudden it's the food. Now, I'm going to say this. If your pet's on kibble and they're itching all the time, I mean, we get that. We understand why that happens. There's just so much stuff in the kibble. Now, one thing I do want to talk about, we talked about this when the keto brand of dog food first came out, Dr. Jasek, and they're stating, well, this dry kibble is much better than another dry kibble. And here's what we would say. It can't be any better because it's dry.
Right.
So I think that people forget that this was one of the major, major benefits of a raw diet is the moisture content. That is one of the big, big issues with kibble, is that it's dry. Every single time your dog eats it, they're in a constant state of dehydration. Now, you're going to see kibble companies start to try to lower their carb content. But here's the trick, Dr. Jasek. They don't even list the carbs on there. Most people don't even understand that kibble and dehydrated, your Honest Kitchens, your mix of meals all have high sugar. I was speaking with somebody the other day, and I said, look, you know, I've done the analysis on most of these, and we're talking about 45% sugar. And she said, there's no sugar listed on here. I said, exactly. There's no carbs listed on there either. But I want you guys to not just focus on that aspect of it, but how much plant protein do we have in there? How much added synthetic vitamins and minerals, and the pure and simple fact that it is dry. This is the thing that I think that people maybe aren't understanding, Dr. Jasek, why water is so important to the dogs.
Right, because they're meant to eat a diet that is, you know, about 70% moisture, which is what fresh food is. And you put that dry food, goes in the stomach, and it's going to rehydrate. I mean, it's just, if you've ever put dry food in a bowl and poured water on it, it draws all that water in and expands. Well, if that's sitting in your dog's stomach, it is going to dehydrate that stomach lining because it's going to draw all that moisture. You know, water, you know, moves from, you know, more moisture to less, right? So if the stomach lining is more moist than the dry food is going to start to suck the moisture out of that. And then we wonder why dogs vomit after they eat dry food, because that food sits in there and it dehydrates the stomach lining. It impairs the natural digestive process and can affect gut motility. So the food sits in the stomach too long and doesn't move out of there. And, you know, back to the carb thing, all these things that you see, these plant ingredients that, like your pea protein or anything soy, any of your lentils, your beans, your potatoes, those all turn to sugar. So when you say, yeah, it's like 45, 50% sugar, it absolutely is, because all of those plant ingredients turn into sugar. They don't put that on the label. They don't say, oh, it's got X amount of carbohydrate or sugars in it, because that would make them look bad. So they hide it in these ingredients that they say are nutritious and high protein, and your grains as well. And a lot of people just feed grain free because it's supposed to be healthier, but it really, from this perspective, it isn't. So you don't want to go down that road. And, you know, another thing I'm wondering is, how these foods are going to be shifted with, you know, current supply chain issues. You know, if they can't get ingredients, they're going to be putting, you know, more cost-effective ingredients in. And I think the quality of these foods is going to go down. You know, when it comes to raw food, where you only got like six ingredients, you can't change those ingredients around very much. But in a dry food, you can trade out ingredients without changing the label. And they have, I believe they have like 6 or 8 months. They have a long time to change the label. Like, they can change ingredients and they don't have to change the labeling right away. So I would expect there could be some big shifts on what is going into these foods, and you're not going to see it in the label, but it's going to show up in your pet's health. Exactly. In a bad way.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, here's the thing. There's been, as the world changes, as more people come on into the dog food world, even people that are promoting raw diets, some big vets out there, some big, you know, celebrity vets. And I've heard them say that all raw meat diets are deficient in certain nutrients. Okay, this is something that they can scare people about. And specifically, they talk about manganese, zinc, vitamin E, and vitamin D, okay? EPA, DHA. And here's the thing. Yeah, that can be true if you're not feeding a wide variety of proteins, especially of organ meats and fish, which is something that you and I promote all the time. But all of these vitamins can be obtained naturally and synergistically through the food if you are feeding at least 3 to 4 proteins, if you are mixing in some extra organs, if you are giving those fish, right? Because most vitamins and minerals are, or at least vitamins anyway, are manufactured in the gut by bacteria that ride there. reside there. So vitamin deficiency is just a symptom of a damaged microbiome in many cases, as you and I talk about many, many times. So don't let that sort of controversy scare you. I think that what you just need to know is something that we talk about constantly is 3 to 4 proteins, all right? And you're going to rotate those in the diet. So we got beef, duck, chicken, pork, goat, lamb, turkey, tripe, fish. Fish is whole prey. So we want to get in there and rotate all of this. And you don't need to feed a dry diet. Now, many people will say, well, I travel and there's breeders out there and there are people that are in competition. I don't know what to, I don't know what to say to you about that. I guess it's all depends on your level of convenience. And for me, I've been doing it so long. I see such benefits. I don't think I could actually put kibble back in my dog's diet for any reason. Now, I say that in these times, let's say that all the food manufacturers shut down and I couldn't get it. I'm not going to let my dog die. That would be a very different situation. But I'm just not going to do the kibble thing, Dr. Jasek, even if they come out with brands that say it's not high in carbs. That's just one of the issues with it.
Yeah, and learn to read the label and learn what that means, because a lot of that is marketing. And so what is not high in carbs? It's 30% as opposed to 50%. You're not doing your pets any favors on that diet. That's still way, way too high in carbs. And, you know, back to your comment, Didi, about the, you know, people saying, oh, raw diets are not balanced. There are a lot of poorly balanced raw diets out there. And I think a lot of the reason for that is a lot of diets, they try to balance with produce, which dogs and cats, carnivores, are not meant to get their nutrition, their vitamins and minerals and all these micronutrients. They're not meant to get it from plant material. It's not that you can't add in some produce along the way, but when we're using that, like, so you're feeding like hamburger and produce, they're not going to be getting the same quality of nutrition as if they were feeding a diet that was, you know, muscle meat and 20 or 25% organ meat plus the ground bone, that kind of balance. You're going to get much more adequate nutrition. But what a lot of diets do is they add in produce and they add in synthetics. And you have no idea how your pet is assimilating those synthetic vitamins and minerals, but it's a crutch. It's okay, we don't know if our diet is really all that well balanced, so just throwing a vitamin and mineral supplement. It's like taking a vitamin and mineral supplement and going and eating at McDonald's and saying, well, I took my vitamins, so I can eat whatever I want. And that happens in the raw food industry. So you do have to be very, very careful about how you balance and feeding this variety. I just want to echo what you said about the rotating the proteins, rotating the body parts. I actually heard once that one of the best sources of zinc is the eyes. And so every time I look at those little sardines with their little eyes, I go, well, this is like giving some extra zinc.
You're like, thank you, like Avatar, you know, when they killed something, they were always like, thank you so much for, you know, feeding us. You're like, thank you, little sardines, for making my dogs, you know, happy. But no, you're right. I mean, zinc is, you can find that in liver, kidney, heart, gizzards, tongue, tripe, eggs, sardines, salmon, eggs. Did I say eggs? And muscle meat, you know, turkey, pork, lamb, beef. So there's, you guys, I know that a lot of you are like, well, I don't know all of these vitamins. I have that on my website. Go to my website, go to the FAQ page, look at vitamins and minerals. And I've got a lot of those listed where you're going to find those in the raw diet.
Yeah. And a note about liver, actually talking to a client the other day who talked to, is actually another veterinarian, that said that would never feed, this is actually somebody that recommended raw, and they said never feed liver because liver is toxic. So liver is, is like one of the richest sources of nutrients that you can get. It's like a superfood. It has so many nutrients in it, and it does not, the liver doesn't really accumulate toxins. It does detoxify, it processes things, but they don't, the toxins don't build up in the liver like it's just this toxic sink. It's really not true. Now you always want to feed well sourced, right? So don't feed factory farmed animals that are eating really these horrific diets that the feedlot animals, factory farmed animals are fed. You always want to avoid that. Make sure they're eating a clean diet, because they're not going to have those nutrients that you're trying to get, you know, out of these organs anyway. It's like plants that are grown in nutrient deficient soils. They're not going to have those nutrients that you're expecting to get, but it's not toxic. And to make a blanket statement like that, I'm like, oh geez. Because she said, well, I was told never to feed liver. I'm like, why were you told that? Like, oh, because it's toxic. I'm like, it's not toxic. Now it doesn't mean that you're going to feed. So when we say, you know, feed 20-25% organ meats, you're not feeding 20% of the diet liver either. You're doing a mix. And that's what's great about you guys, DDs, you have these organ blends, so they can get a mix of the different organs. So you want that variety. You know, when we say feed, you know, 20% organs, that's a mix. So you're feeding liver, heart, kidney, spleen. So you're getting all these different nutrients, and you're not feeding, you know, an overabundance of one particular organ.
Yeah. You know what I was feeding yesterday?
What's
bison,
that?
Bison, yeah. Testicles.
I
had one in each hand. I sure did. And here's the thing about bison testicles, and they don't, when you cut into them, there's no blood. It doesn't like squirt. It's just like, it's like a, you know, a big soft egg, and you cut it, and the inside of it is this very soft meat. It's, you know, we, what in the restaurants, they call them calf fries, right? Mm-hmm. But so I was using those the other day, and the dogs love them. I mean, they're so I wouldn't be afraid to feed those. I know that some people can go, oh, it's calf, you know, testicle. I mean, bison testicles, but they're great, and they're great for your dog. And they don't squirt any kind of, you know, blood or anything. So they're very nice. I'm going to do a video on those pretty soon. But another thing, Dr. Jessica, just wanted to touch on really quick. There are some people that contact me and they say, well, my dog, you know, I've heard they can be deficient in vitamin C. So they start giving them, you know, oranges and stuff like that. Well, listen, dogs synthesize their own vitamin C. They make their own vitamin C. That's ascorbic acid. But here is where you guys may not realize vitamin C can be found in the raw diet. You're just talking about it. Liver, kidney, heart, and fish. Okay? So just remember that dogs make their own vitamin C. So they can create a lot of this great stuff, unless they've got a microbiome that's been severely damaged by vaccines, flea and tick, heartworm, those type of things, okay? All right, so I want to move on to another subject of which I get some calls about, and where I see that people are a little bit confused. Dr. Jason, some people, when they hear their dog cough, here's what I'd like for you to define. What is a true obstruction, something that would cause a dog to cough because they have something that's getting caught somewhere, or a cough that's due to allergies or kennel cough?
Well, I think for one, you want to look at how often is the dog coughing. So if a dog were truly choked, like, you know, had a true obstruction, which means that it's impairing their ability to breathe, they are going to be panicked. I mean, absolutely panicked, pawing at their mouth, struggling to breathe, I mean, you're going to know this animal is in trouble. If they're just doing a little bit of extra, you know, intermittent coughing, I always ask, you know, how many times a day do you actually hear your dog cough? And if they're hearing their dog cough twice a week, or something like that, we don't have a major disease process of any kind. And a cough is a normal thing. You know, dogs down there, they're sniffing around the dirt, especially this time of year, all these new smells, they're going to inhale stuff. And this is a defense mechanism, you know, to cough stuff out. You breathe in a little dust, some soil, maybe a few mold spores sitting around after the winter, and the body's going to cough them out. And that's a good thing. If the dog is, you know, coughing incessantly. So with something like kennel cough, or, you know, we talked about before, there's no real evidence that dogs can get this COVID, but if they were to get some respiratory disease that caused a cough, they're coughing all the time. I mean, just cough, 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 multiple times an hour at least. And that's a sign that, you know, we have more of a process going on. Now, the thing about something getting stuck in the throat, so the body has this pretty well figured out. When you swallow, your airway is closed off. So actually choking in a dog is pretty rare. Even eating things like, you know, dogs that eat big pieces of bone, like, you know, people that do things they're not supposed to do, like feed cooked bones, feed the T-bone from the steak, or, you know, some cooked chicken bones or something like that. Those are going to cause problems in the digestive tract. They don't choke on those. I mean, it's not that it's impossible, but it is extremely rare. And I know, Didi, we were talking about earlier that people ask, well, my dog's coughing, could it be the bone in the food? These tiny little pieces of bone that are in a ground blend, I would say it's virtually impossible for a dog to choke on. Even the ones that are like, you know, the size of the tip of your finger, you know, people give these, you know, I saw a piece of bone the size of my fingernail, and I'm wondering if that's causing a problem. It's like, no, absolutely not. I mean, it's just almost impossible that could cause a problem. And ground that small, they're not going to be sharp enough. And because they're raw, they're not going to be sharp enough or brittle enough to really even cause a lot of digestive irritations, as opposed to something like a cooked chicken bone. You know, we have these stories from the past where dogs get sick. They get into the garbage and they eat, you know, there was, you know, leftover chicken carcasses in there, you know, from dinner, chicken bones. And they ate a bunch of those. And like, yeah, that will make them sick because they're cooked and they're brittle and they get a big piece of those bones. Those can definitely cause problems. But these little bones in the grinds, it seems almost impossible to me that they're going to cause some of the problems that people ask about.
Yeah, it's really funny because I was talking to, you know, some of our, one of our manufacturers yesterday, and he said, I get those calls all the time where people believe that these ground, and I call them finely ground bones, you know, two different products. One has a little bit larger bone in their beef, but one, it, you know, the PMRs and the HVMs, the one that had the fruits and veggies and the PMRs, those are so finely ground. I mean, I can take a fork, and I do this every single day, Dr. JC, because I warm up my dog's food on the stove in their pan. And the way that I do it in their bowl is that I take a fork and I smush it down. Mm-hmm. Because I'm just trying to get a little warmth on one side, and then I'm going to flip it over like a little pancake, warm it up slightly. It doesn't even brown it. But if there were major pieces of bone in there, I would be seeing that, because dogs primarily gulp. I mean, they can't chew. They don't have hinged jaws. Yes, they can, you know, grab with their back teeth and, you know, like they put their paws over a stick. Think about that. When they're crunching on a stick, they're not chewing. They're just grinding that down. Or mm-hmm. I shouldn't say grinding. What should I say? It's almost like a knife, right? So they're just
Their teeth are more like, are more for shearing. They're more for like taking the meat, like say they were eating an animal that they had killed. Their teeth are more about pulling the meat off the bone, you know, pulling that meat, pulling those pieces into their mouth and then swallowing them. Their digestion really starts in the stomach. The saliva is just kind of make things slippery to get them down into the stomach. And that's where the digestion starts.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that people have gotten away from remembering that these are descendants of wolves. Their teeth have not flattened out. Not the last time that my new German Shepherd got her mouth on my hand. Their teeth are still pretty darn sharp. So they, and the pH, I mean, can you explain this pH? How strong is a 1 or 2 pH in the stomach? What is that equivalent to that our pet parents can get their minds wrapped around in out here in the real world?
That's very, very acidic. I don't know that, you know, I don't actually know of anything out in the real world that would be that low of a pH, because it would be pretty, you know, irritating. Like if you got acid, and this is actually hydrochloric acid, if you got that, you know, like on your hands, it would be quite irritating. And the stomach has both, you know, it produces this acid, but it also has these natural protective mechanisms that protect the stomach that a lot of medications will break down. That's why we get digestive upset with certain medications that break down this protective barrier that the stomach has to protect it against, you know, digesting itself. And then we get a lot of irritation and get ulcers. But, you know, you think about how people will say, oh, I can't eat citrus or something like that because it's too acidic. It bothers my stomach. That's nowhere near what you'd be getting in a dog's stomach. And that's what it's there for, is to start to break down the food, because they aren't, you know, chewing 32 times or whatever, like we're told we're supposed to. It all starts in the stomach.
Yeah. Yeah. So if your dog basically is coughing, maybe they have allergies, maybe they have kennel cough. How long, if you do nothing, which, I mean, seriously, what can you do about kennel cough? It's like a cold, right? So how long would a dog experience kennel cough typically?
It's usually like if you or I were to get a cough or a cold. And what I would tell people is I would usually give it about a week, and then I would look at how the dog is doing, because initially antibiotics aren't going to do anything, because it's a lot of times it's a virus, starts out as a virus. So the antibiotics are not going to be effective. Now I have seen some cases over time that will develop into something a little more serious, like a pneumonia, just like in people. You can get a cough or a cold, and that can sometimes settle into your chest and become more severe. So we look at how is the dog doing. We want to make sure they're eating and drinking some. Sometimes they will run a fever. Fevers are not bad. Fevers are the way the body fights this, because these viruses proliferate and do the most damage at normal body temperature. So when the body temperature goes up, so say your dog has a temperature of 103, as long as they're staying hydrated, primarily hydration is the most important thing. They can go a day or two without eating. And sometimes a fast is good, because you know what? Their body is spending its energy fighting this bug and not expending any energy digesting food. Now, we don't want them to get malnourished, but, you know, missing a couple meals and you know, if they're running a little bit of a fever, as long as they're drinking and staying hydrated, that's going to do a day or two of that could actually do a lot to knock out the bug, instead of, you know, running in, getting, you know, put on antibiotics, which then damages the gut, which damages the immune system and makes it actually harder for the pets to recover. So I usually say, you know, 5 to 7 days, they should be starting to get over it. If the symptoms go beyond 10 days, then that's when you really want to get your pet checked. and make sure that it's not developing into something more serious, or that we have a secondary, you know, bacterial infection. Because when they have a virus that's affecting the cells in the respiratory tract, it's weakening that immune system, and they are a little bit more susceptible to getting a bacterial infection. It depends on the health of their immune system when they get started. But by far the majority of coughing dogs that I have seen, I've treated them symptomatically. I've used homeopathics. There's a homeopathic called Drosera, which is really effective in treating coughs. I used to use that a lot in kennel cough cases, and I would rarely use antibiotics. So if you just think about if you got a cough or a cold and how you feel, and you lay in bed and you don't do a whole lot for a few days and you let your body rest, and then you start to get over it. And it's no different for your pet.
What if the pet has been coughing for 4 to 5 weeks?
Well, then we need to look at, we need to look a little bit deeper. So then, I would be asking questions like, is the pet still, it's unlikely that that's going to be infectious at that point. So if you had something that was caused by a bacteria or a virus, in 4 to 5 weeks, it's either going to be gone, or the pet will have gotten so sick that you will know there's something wrong. Like say it did develop into pneumonia. Those pets are really sick. They lose their energy. Their ability to breathe is a little bit compromised. And so you're going to know that. So going on that long, this time of year, a little bit of allergy, there's lots of things growing and things starting to bloom, and that, you can get a little bit of an allergic bronchitis, like a chronic irritation. We'd want to be ruling out heart disease. Some forms of heart disease can cause some fluid to build up in the lungs. We want to make sure that that is not an issue. So, at that point, you probably really want to be getting your pet checked and have a veterinarian listen to the lungs, maybe even take a chest x-ray, just to make sure that there's not something else going on. But, and it's not going to be due to the food at that point. This is something that's going on in the airway. I don't ever see like allergies or reactions to food show up in the lungs. If there's going to be any kind of like sensitivity to food, it's more likely going to show up in the gut and not in the respiratory tract.
Gotcha. Okay. Good to know. Good to know. This time of year, there's a lot of new things growing, and we do find that pets are itching. Maybe we've got the sneezing or we've got the coughing going on. One thing we don't want to do is further damage the gut biome. So what is the natural way to help them through this allergy season?
One of the things I recommend a lot, because I see this a lot, and use your common sense. If you're feeding the same thing now that you were feeding in January, or the same, type of rotation, you haven't made any major changes, it's not all of a sudden going to be making your pet itch. So let's look at what has changed. We have things growing. Your pet's out there. They're outside more, out in your yard. A lot of times we're going for longer walks. There's not snow on the ground. So the pets are exposed to the vegetation. And so that can cause some, spring allergy flare-ups, especially in pets that are prone to that. We're going to see some increased itchiness. So a really great thing is nettles. So, you may have heard of stinging nettle, which is if you're out hiking and you see this plant, it's got these little kind of pokers on it. And if you get one of those on your skin, it'll make you itch like crazy. But made into an herbal tincture, and you can get these widely available to your natural grocery stores. You can order them online. You get a nettles tincture, and nettles is like a natural antihistamine, and it's incredibly safe. Actually has a lot of great nutritional benefits too. It's got a lot of vitamins and minerals in the stinging nettle plant, and it can help. So it's super safe, and it's just something really easy for people. Just try it. Your pet's itching. It's springtime. you know, see if it works before jumping on the Apoquil or prednisone or some of these harsher drugs. Because a lot of times you just have to ride out these first, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of springtime, and then the immune system will kind of settle down. So, you know, that's something I really recommend. Give that a try. Pay attention to where you take your pets. You know, maybe there's certain plants that it is sensitive to. A lot of plants or a lot of pets eat plants this time of year. I mean, my dogs are up my garden, which is just weeds right now because I haven't planted anything because it's supposed to snow again this weekend. You know, they're out there grazing. So they're ingesting the stuff too. And, you know, another thing, I think pets go through a bit of a detox in the spring. They go out, they eat these greens. They're maybe flushing some stuff out of their body, and pets do detox through the skin. They can get a soft stool, a little diarrhea, but they can also, some of these toxins that may have built up over the wintertime, can also be pushed out through the skin. So you don't want to completely suppress this process. Now we want pets to be comfortable. So if they're miserable, when people contact me, you know, they're pets up all night. You know, what can I do? And sometimes we have to intervene with something stronger if they're that stressed. But for the most part, I think you can do some, you know, gentle herbal treatment and ride out these few weeks. But it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with what you're feeding. It's almost more than 95% of the time, it's what's going on outside in the pet's environment. And watch pesticides, chemicals that are being sprayed, even fertilizer, which isn't necessarily toxic, but it could certainly be irritating. You put these, you know, things out on your lawn to make your lawn come up nice and green and pretty for the summertime. And if your dog's getting that on their skin and on their paws, that certainly could be irritating.
Right, right. And I think that if your dog is coughing, maybe they would do it while you're on a video chat with one of these fabulous pet parents, and you could hear that. Would you be able to hear, is there a sound? It's like some describe it as a honking sound, which mm-hmm. is kennel cough, right? Versus something that might be in a respiratory type issue.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, to some degree. I mean, obviously, it's not a substitution for taking a listen to the lungs, but the combination of listening, just watching the pet breathe, because if they're in any kind of respiratory distress, like they're coughing, but then in between coughing, their, you know, sides are just heaving. Sometimes the way they stand, dogs that are really having a hard time breathing, like a dog or cat, this would go for both, that has a heart issue and is really having a hard time getting air, they will literally stand like with their elbows out, like they're trying to get the lungs to expand as much as possible, getting the rib cage to expand. So a lot of times just by watching an animal, I can tell if they are, you know, distressed, if it's just an occasional cough. That kind of honking cough can definitely be, you know, something infectious, like a kennel cough. Collapsing trachea too in our little dogs. You know, once little dogs get middle-aged and older, they're very prone to this collapsing trachea, where the trachea literally collapses. Trachea, the windpipe, is cartilage. And so sometimes if that cartilage is weak in certain breeds, especially these little toy breeds, and just the force of the air going in and out of that windpipe will cause it to collapse. And it's a little bit like kind of blowing air in a pop bottle. You know, you get that sound of the air whooshing through a smaller space, and they cough. And so I can tell a lot by history too. So, you know, is it consistently worse with exercise or when it's excited, or does it wake up in the morning and cough? Because that tells me that, okay, that's probably more likely there's phlegm buildup overnight, and they got to clear that out when they first get up in the morning, get moving around, they clear everything out, and then they're fine the rest of the day. They're just, you know, they're building up a little bit of phlegm. If they cough every time they exercise, move around, then we've got, you know, more of a irritant in the, you know, in the airway, that increased airflow going in and out, whether it's collapsing trachea or just irritating it because of the, you know, the extra air movement, that, you know, would cause them to cough. So there is a lot that we can glean from, you know, combination of history and just watching the animal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so collapsing trachea, how does that develop? You know, does that develop? Some people say, well, that develops because you've got a dog who pulls and they're on a flat collar and it's pushing up against that. Is that true?
No, I don't think that causes it. That could aggravate it for sure. But I think it's more of a genetic predisposition. I mean, it could to some degree be nutritional. So again, pets that are not getting the correct building blocks, the cartilage type building blocks, like they would get in things like, you know, ground bone, bone broth, things like that to keep the cartilage strong. But I think primarily it shows up in these smaller breeds. That cartilage is just so thin and kind of weak in these smaller breeds that it's more of a genetic predisposition. Now, if you have a dog with a collapsing trachea and they're pulling on a leash, yes, that's going to make them cough. So I would recommend using a harness instead of a leash. But I don't think the pulling actually causes it.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. So that is our podcast for today. Remember, before you let your mind run away with you and determine that your cat or dog has COVID and you're going to get rid of them so that you don't get sick, please contact Dr. Jasek. All right. Because this is highly unlikely. And dogs are stressed right now. There's a lot of stress that's going on in the world. There's a lot of anxiety in the home. And this comes out in our pets. So let's talk with Dr. Jasek. You can contact her at ahavet.com. That's Apple, Harry, Apple, vet.com. And let her talk you off the ledge. let her be your Instapot relief valve.
Yeah. And once again, you know, we'll keep you informed. And if you really need to blow off some steam, I don't know if they're doing this up in your area, Dee Dee, but are they doing the 8 p.m. howling up there?
They are doing that.
Yeah.
But I haven't been home or I haven't stuck my head outside at 8 p.m. because I haven't recognized it. Now, we all live fairly, you know, 2.5 acres apart, but are you guys howling in your neighborhood?
Yeah, we're hearing them howl here. They did that last night, and I didn't know what was going on. My husband said, "Oh, it must be 8 p.m." I'm like, "What?" And he's like, "Oh, everybody's, you know, supposed to howl at 8 o'clock to help, you know, support, in support of, I think, our healthcare workers, and just to get outside and just blow off some steam and do something. You know, we're so separated from personal contact that it's, you know, this sense of connectedness." And yeah, there's a lot of people in our neighborhood howling last night at 8 p.m. So that's something else you could do to blow off some steam.
That's wild. Is it every night at 8 p.m. or just Wednesdays?
No, I guess so. I guess it's like every night. And somehow that started here in Colorado, because Chris said he was on a call from work and there's people in California and on the call and they weren't doing it there. So evidently that's something started here, but maybe it'll become a nationwide howling event every night at 8 o'clock. We get the dogs going too, you know, get the dogs howling and the people howling, and we can all blow off some steam.
I love it. Ow! And get your howl on. Yeah, we're going to have to get masks that say, "Get your howl on," right?
Right, right.
All right, thanks, Dr. Jasek. We'll see you next week here on The Raw Dog Food Truth.
Oh, snaps, snaps, snaps.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.